Case number 13-5119, Coal River Energy, LLC, Appellant versus Sally Jewell, Secretary, United States Department of the Interior, et al. Mr. Becker for the appellant, Ms. Hogan for the appellees.
If you could give us a minute till we go. All set.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Stephen Becker, counsel for Plaintiff Appellant Coal River Energy, LLC. Before I get to the substance of my argument, I just want to alert the court that only recently when I prepared for oral argument did I come to the realization that American Road and Transportation Builders had brought a second, indeed a third, most recently a third case, so that there's now ARTBA 2 and ARTBA 3. And although obviously I didn't know to address it in my brief, nor apparently did the government, I'll be happy to address ARTBA 2 and 3 here. Coal River can prevail on the merits of count 2 of its complaint without challenging the validity of the regulations themselves, which tax coal. Tax the sale of coal. Rather, we are challenging the application of those regulations to those sales that fall within the export stream, that occur within the export stream. And so this is not a case such as the Air Force versus FLRA case cited by the district court, where the court would be called upon to rewrite these SMACRA regulations. We have no concern. The regulation taxing sale per se is benign. It's only when that regulation is applied to those sales, and it's a small percentage of the sales nationwide that fall, that occur within the export stream, is there a problem. So what we're looking for is for the agency to apply a narrowing construction, not to rewrite or have the regulations rewritten for them. The agency can continue to tax sales, but simply not apply them and apply the tax in violation of the export clause. And it can do so as a practical matter through a guideline or an instruction in its payer handbook that makes clear that it is not going so far as to collect taxes on sales that fall within the export stream.
So I gather your position is whenever Congress passes a 60-day limitation or a 90-day limitation on the challenging of a regulation, and a petitioner challenges the application of the regulation to 20% of the regulated class, only 20%, then in those circumstances, that's an application rather than a challenge to the regulations?
Well, if the regulations, Your Honor, apply in such a way that...
Why don't you try to answer my question?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why don't you just answer my question?
Well, if I understand...
In other words, if somebody challenges the regulations application to only 20% of the regulated class for some reason, that's not a challenge to the regulation.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. No, I didn't mean to suggest that just because there's a percentage of the total sales because that percentage is low, that somehow that is an exception to the rule. Even if 70% of exports occurred within the export stream, the point is that on the face of the regulations, the tax on sale per se is benign. It's the manner in which the regulation is applied.
Well, the problem I'm having with that would be true in almost an infinite number of cases in which a party wishes to challenge a promulgated regulation.
Well,
in other words, people challenge promulgated regulations. You're saying essentially that the 60-day limitation would apply only if I'm challenging the regulation holus bolus with respect. There's no part of the regulation that could be legal.
Well,
that's what you're essentially saying. Well, that's what the 60-day limitation is limited to that. If I'm challenging a regulation because of its application to 20% of the transactions, that's an application. That's not a challenge to the regulation.
If on their face the regulations are benign and they're capable of being applied in a constitutional manner,
are applied.
And are applied in a constitutional manner, then obviously there's no challenge that lies. But to the extent that they're applied in violation of the Constitution.
Do you have any case to support that proposition?
I can dig it out and give it to you, I hope, during rebuttal. Right now I can't think of a particular case other than the Linick case in the Ninth Circuit, which we cited to, and the Ward the Supreme Court case in Ward versus Rock against racism, where it was explained that an agency can apply a narrowing construction of a regulation.
That's not the same issue.
Now suppose we get beyond that and don't agree with you on that. Let me ask you one practical question and one legal question. As a practical matter, if you don't pay the fee and then an enforcement action is brought against you, you can raise this argument as the defense in the enforcement action, correct?
Indeed, Your Honor. And in ARTBA 1...
So the issue here is not total preclusion of your ability ever to challenge it. It's simply that you wouldn't have the Abbott Labs pre-enforcement challenge. You would have to raise it as a defense in an enforcement proceeding for failure to pay the fee, correct?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. And in ARTBA 1, the court, the circuit...
Sorry to interrupt. But then, so that's my practical question. I wanted to just make sure we're all on the same page on that, and I'll ask the government that, too. On the, it seems to me your strongest legal ground is the after-arising argument, which I find to be a tricky argument on that. But assuming, and it doesn't in the text of the statute, as you say, have a time limit there, but why not borrow the 60-day, as the district court did, from the other part of the statute?
Because whatever concerns supported the imposition of a 60-day limit, they were concerns relating to the environmental nature of SMACRA. This is a case, essentially a tax case under the Constitution. And moreover, even before that, I should point out that textually, 1276 says, or after such time. That's not a void as far as the statute of limitations is concerned. That's juxtaposed with the 60-day initial limit, the pre-enforcement limit. And so Congress, by that language, made clear that it was not imposing a limitation of time.
But you could have filed a petition with the Secretary under its Section 1211G1 of SMACRA, that says after the Secretary has adopted regulations, any person may petition the director, et cetera, if they're aggrieved by the regulations, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe we can under national mining, which I'd like to address as well. It appears that the court, in our view, took a position in conflict with the prior functional music line of cases and the doctrine that permits one to seek post-statutory time period, in this case 60 days, review of the validity of the regulations themselves if after a petition for an amendment is denied or as an as-applied challenge in the context of regulation as it's applied as in,
well,
in this case.
That goes to the enforcement process, doesn't it? That's when it's applied.
Well, indeed, Your Honor. And so
that you could go through the tax court, right?
I'm not aware that this is not an internal revenue tax, so I don't believe, Your Honor, that we could go to the tax court. This is a fee.
Where would it be enforced?
Well, OSM, the Office of Surface Management, actually collects the tax, in our view, by way of enforcement. This is not a voluntarily paid tax. This tax is paid.
Well, you could refuse to pay.
Yeah, if you don't pay it.
You could refuse to pay, right?
If we refuse to pay and we were delinquent, the payer handbook says very specifically that there'll be a cessation is the threat, at least, of the cessation of operations, so loss of the operating permit and a denial of future permits. So to Coal River, this is tantamount to every quarter an enforced payment, in which case under ARTBA 1, this court recognizes that in the context of an enforcement, which it was distinguishing from an as-applied situation, that we would have the right post-statutory period, post-60 days, to contest the validity of the regulation taxing the sale.
Here's one way to read this statute. The last sentence of 1276A1 says, talking about petitions for review filed in court, it says, any such petition may be made by any person who participated in the administrative proceedings and who is aggrieved. And then when you get to subsection B, the first sentence says, the court shall hear such petition or complaint solely on the record made before the secretary. Why can't I read that to say that you are required to exhaust administrative remedies before you can petition the court? And since you concede that you could file a petition under 1211G1 saying that this rulemaking should not apply to exports, why aren't you lacking in subject matter jurisdiction because you haven't complied with A1?
Well, under the ripeness doctrine, Your Honor, recognized in this circuit, Coal River, which didn't exist until 2003, didn't exist at the time of the promulgation of the regulations.
But if you can file a petition once you exist and once this threat of this enforcement against you, if you can file that petition with the secretary at that time, then why aren't you barred, since you didn't do so, by that last sentence of A1?
Well, National Mining appears to stand for the proposition that we were not entitled to go that route, that that would be a circumvention of what it perceived to be the inviolate requirement that a petition be filed within the first 60 days. So the bottom line is Coal River thought that it had a challenge to the application rather than to the regulation itself, and pursued the action in court the way it did.
Counsel, I agree with Judge Kavanaugh that the most difficult question is the application of the 60-day limitation to you as a newly constituted company, which is your best argument there is the Clean Air Act has a specific provision lacking in this statute. But here's what troubles me about that position, and it is a tricky issue. If you were right about that, wouldn't the result of that be just a total elimination of the 60-day requirement, because you could always have a situation in which an industry wanted to challenge that at any time for years, simply by funding a new company to challenge it, and thereby making the 60-day limitation useless? In other words, even if there wasn't a Clean Air Act difference, aren't we sort of driven to the same decision the district judge came to, that you only have 60 days after a certain point that you came into existence and had the application?
Well, I suggest respectfully, Your Honor, that the consideration should not be of some fugitive application by some company that wanted to skirt the rules,
you could have a whole industry skirting the rule every time you had a 60-day limitation just by there's always going to be a new company that comes into existence, and that new company, under your view, would have 6 years. So the 60-day limitation that Congress tried to put forth would be de facto eliminated.
But, Your Honor, I don't even agree with the premise, because the words of the statute say, or after such time, and that's juxtaposed with the 60 days. If anything, Congress looked at the 60 days and in the same moment decided not to reemploy the 60 days. As Your Honor pointed out, the opposite was the case in the contemporaneous Clean Air Act amendments of 1977. There they chose affirmatively to require, to reassert, have the 60 days reasserted. Here, they did not. They chose language. This is not a void. It says, or after such time. It's not as though this, the limitations period was not addressed. It was addressed, and it's open-ended.
What's your best case, and I realize the government doesn't contest this, what's your best case for a new company being a ground arising after? In other words, it's not clear to me, and the government doesn't contest this, but it's not clear to me that a new company coming into existence is a ground arising after.
Well, it's not only a new company coming into existence, Your Honor, but it's also a company, in this case, a company that didn't even have exports and hence was not paying the right. unconstitutional tax for 5 years. If I recall correctly, right. the company was formed in 2003 and its first exports were in 2008.
Right. So that's probably why the government doesn't contest it. I was just curious on the law. Why don't we hear from the government and we'll give you time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your
Honor. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tara Hogan on behalf of the Federal Defendant Appellees. We believe that the trial court correctly dismissed Coal River's complaint, which challenges the substance and the validity of regulations that were first promulgated in 1977 is untimely. Coal River's attempt to draw a distinction between a facial challenge and an applied challenge is just simply not found in the text of 1276A itself. In fact, as this court has recognized in National Mining and in other cases addressing similar judicial review statutes, Congress had a specific intent to very narrowly limit judicial review of rules and regulations that were promulgated under this act, and had a specific intent to preclude further challenge to those rules after the 60-day period.
Well, they can always, just to make sure we're on the same page on the practical, they can always raise it as a defense in an enforcement proceeding, correct?
We agree with that. And in addition, for this particular claim, of course, Coal River could go to the Court of Federal Claims right. and file a suit for money damages. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not going to do that because it's going to lose on the merits.
What do you do with the after arising language? That, for me, is the hardest question on the text. Why would we go with 60 days when in the Clean Air Act and it was explicit here it's not, so why should we read into the statute something that's not there?
The court has to read some statute of limitations mm-hmm. into that. We don't presume that Congress intended open-ended claims against the United States. So the court has to read in some statute of limitations. And so the two that were presented with are either 2401A, the six-year statute of limitations against claims against the United States, or to adopt the 60 days that is already in the statute. And there's a few reasons why we believe that's the correct result. It's certainly true that the Clean Air Act does specifically, explicitly provide that the 60 days is repeated, and that certainly makes it a simple answer in that particular case. But we also, when the court's faced with an issue of what's the appropriate statute of limitations, it's appropriate to look at sister or sister acts, if you will, or related statutes. And in that sense, it's appropriate to look to what Congress did in the Clean Air Act, which is to reapply that same time limit.
So no matter what is what you're saying, and this makes sense to me, no matter what, we're not going to be applying the literal language of the statute because we're not going to say indefinite. You have to look to some other source to draw, whether it's 60 days or 6 years, and 60 days makes more sense here. Is that the...
Right. I mean, that Congress didn't provide a specific statute of limitations doesn't answer the question. That is the question. And again, I think particularly because, you know, this is a legal issue that was available to parties at the time the regulation was promulgated in 1977. It really would be an anomaly to suggest that those companies would have had to bring this claim within 60 days, but Coal River gets to bring this claim within 6 years. There's no reason to treat those parties differently.
You do agree, I gather, that a new company is an after-arising ground?
Well, it's an interesting question, Your Honor. We didn't challenge that finding by the district court. I mean, before the district court, we did make some arguments that parties who enter a marketplace are subject to the rules that exist at the time, and that certainly wouldn't preclude them from challenging the substantive validity of a regulation, for example, in the context of an enforcement action. We didn't challenge that particular finding, but it does present
it. We accept that, but you're saying it may be an open question.
Certainly, if the court wanted to reconsider that issue, we would be open to that. I think.
I don't think we can do that.
Wait a minute, counsel.
You can say that. You can ask us to assume it arguendo, I guess.
Certainly, and I certainly even under those facts, if we assume that the event that ripened the claim was their sale of coal to foreign buyers in 2008. Then the 60-day limit still applies to them, and they still were untimely because they didn't file for another 2 years.
What is the government's position with respect to the meaning of the last sentence of A1? It says any such petition may be made by any person who participated in the administrative proceedings and who is aggrieved by the action of the Secretary.
The requirement to participate in the administrative proceedings is normally one which we would insist upon, particularly at the outset, had this been filed within 60 days. If a party hadn't participated in the administrative proceedings, that would be one reason to find that they didn't have standing. I think this is a little bit more nuanced because, again, we're talking about a party that came into existence 30
standing
years later.
Don't mean standing.
I beg your pardon?
You said standing. You don't mean standing.
No, I'm sorry. That they didn't participate in the administrative proceedings, that they hadn't exhausted their administrative remedies. But again, I think this really goes back to this is the wrong
exhaustion
tool.
Exhaustion is not a jurisdictional question.
No.
So you didn't raise it.
We did not raise it.
Yeah.
The question here is really is this the appropriate tool that Coal River is 1276A or as it's more heavily relying upon the Administrative Procedure Act, the correct tool for Coal River to challenge this regulation. And it could have been, it's not anymore, they're out of time. That doesn't mean that they're forever precluded from...
Because of the enforcement proceeding in the Court of Claims.
Those are at least two available options to them.
What about the idea that in the enforcement proceeding they could essentially be put out of business in order to have to bring their challenge? That's just the way it goes, or?
Well, what would happen?
Play that out. How will that happen?
What happens is, of course, they make these payments on a quarterly basis. They report how much coal they mine, how much fee that they believe they're owed, and eventually, what would happen is if they were not paying, if that math didn't add up. OSM would audit them and would issue a notice of violation. Well, first, of course, they would say, I think you made a mistake here, but
right.
To issue a notice of violation saying you've underpaid, and they would, and then potentially they would have the option to appeal that administratively. If they simply ignore that notice of violation, then yes, it's true that OSM could issue a cessation order to have them cease operations, and that would be a very serious result.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't brief this, and I would certainly be more than happy to explain to the court in briefing if this is something that's of interest to them. But they would have an administrative avenue to challenge the notice of violation first.
Before they were shut down.
Right, if they took action on that immediately.
And if they just overtly said, we're not paying because we think it's unconstitutional and we're just teeing up the court case, do you think they would get shut down or not? I guess you can't speak to that.
I couldn't speak to that, Your Honor.
Could they file a petition basically asserting that position with the Secretary under its 30 U.S.C. 1211G1?
They could file a petition for rulemaking, and this, you know, as this Court has explained in NMA, to the extent that that the agency does reconsider its position and issues an action on that, then that would present a new opportunity to file in the district court. But this court has explained in NMA that that's limited to where the agency actually does a, you know, a fulsome reconsideration of its position.
On the merits of this, there's a cert petition pending from the Federal Circuit, right?
There is currently a cert petition. The government's brief is due, I think, next week.
What was that government want?
So, but to be clear, there have been two cert petitions.
Right.
The first
one was denied
in 2011. The second cert petition that's been filed by coal producers.
I didn't hear what you said about the government.
The government's response in opposition to the petition is due next week in that case. If the court has no further questions, we would respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel for the government was talking about cessation of operations. I myself do not know exactly what proceedings would be required before cessation. Nothing in the payer handbook indicates it. The payer handbook talks also about a denial of permit, and permits, of course, are essential to the operation of these coal mines. And so, in our view, these are not payments. This is a sort of a sui generis situation if you compare it with the payment of, let's say, internal revenue taxes, where an enforcement proceeding would be brought against a delinquent taxpayer, but there wouldn't be, as far as I know generally, any particular consequence to the business. There's no compulsion involved other than the threat of penalties as a result of an enforcement action. Here, there are specific consequences that are laid out such that Coal River doesn't see any practical difference, certainly as a matter of policy under SMACRA, between an enforcement action brought against someone who's delinquent, chooses not to pay the tax, and indeed, Judge Silberman, that could be also a mechanism by which one might get into court, whereas otherwise one might not. Why should there be a difference as a policy matter between the treatment of someone like Coal River, who's faithfully paid its taxes every quarter, and one who is delinquent? I don't see how Congress, certainly in the context of SMACRA, wanted to award with jurisdiction over its claims just the delinquent taxpayer and not a faithful taxpayer such as Coal River.
You could go to the, on a separate tack, you could go to the Court of Federal Claims. A file suit?
Yes, we could, but not for a declaratory judgment action.
I understand.
Well,
I understand that.
So what? I mean, that, I thought that argument was a little, having recently brought such a case for all the judiciary, and avoid it on the principle that if we got the ruling on the substance, the declaratory judgment would follow as the day follows night. So isn't that sort of an illusion? If you won on the merits.
Your Honor, that's the technical response to your question. The reason we're in this court is because of this court's decision in Drummond, which recognizes that this is a tax on the sale of coal. And that's why Coal River chose to sue
in this court, because you don't like the Federal Circuit's result.
If you want to go to the merits of that, Drummond is a beautifully written opinion. I agree with you entirely.
Yeah.
However, I think you're overreading it badly, because it's perfectly consistent. This goes to the merits, which is, we'll probably never reach, but it's perfectly consistent to say it's coal produced, but the charge is at the time of sale. In other words, it could be still coal produced rather than coal extracted, but the charges at the time of sale. But anyway, I appreciate your heavy reliance on Drummond.
Am I out of time?
You are. Thank you. The case is submitted.